Good afternoon, everyone. This is a bargaining session on August 28th, 2024, between the UCF chapter of the United Faculty of Florida and the bargaining team representing the UCF Board of Trustees. So it's good to see everyone this afternoon. Hopefully we'll get some things accomplished. Salat, I just want you to know we're very pleased that we got a couple of articles TA'd in between sessions, some that we had talked about last time. So we've TA'd articles 18 and 32. So that's tremendous. Thank you for your help on that. And also thank you for sending us that summary overnight too. That was very helpful. Thank you. Charlie, can you show us the minutes from August 14th? Can you scroll up slightly?
One quick thing. Did we Article 30? What did we do with it?
So, Talat, that article is the one where we have dates and articles that we will reopen in the future because we reopen the salaries article each time. And so we kind of threw it just an example one up there so that we can talk about it, but we didn't. I don't think there's any opposition. It's just a question of getting it all figured out.
No, that's it, because I don't think we did anything with it. Yeah.
Correct. Talat, I had just presented that last time.
Yeah.
To talk about the possibility that we might change our rhythm on bargaining.
Oh, yes. Oh, I understand that now. Yeah.
And Charlie, can you scroll up so we can see the, scroll down, excuse me. All right, so the one on the 12th is marked as a Thursday. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Is there anyone that has any objections to the minutes?
I think we're fine.
Ivana, do I get a thumbs up?
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna stop sharing then, thank you.
All right, thank you. We've got our minutes approved from last time. Well, Talat, as we've been communicating, we both have some things to talk about. And I don't know, do you have a preference whether you go first or we go first?
So actually what, you know, maybe not a preference, but I think there's one thing that I did want to bring up, because I think given the president's message to everyone, particularly announcing the raise for out of unit colleagues, there is an expectation that this meeting today will have something for in unit members. There is the confusion about when, supposing we don't sign a deal today on Article 23 on the salary raises, there is confusion about when it will go in effect and whether people will be losing out. I think what I'm hearing, and I'm hearing actually not just from bargaining unit members, but also from chairs of departments, and because they are getting also, you know, pushback from their own colleagues, their faculty members, that, you know, they haven't seen a raise in a while and they want to know what is going to be happening. So a lot of confusion has been created. And the idea here is that if today we don't do something, then this is going to delay their paycheck with the raise even further. So that is one thing. I think that's a major concern. So what I was wondering was that if you are going to talk about Article 23, maybe that is something We do. You said you had some comments on it. And then I also have some things that, again, have to do with Article 23, because we really thought that we were going to get something today. So maybe that is something that we go ahead, because that is probably of most concern to everyone who's joining us here.
Okay, Talat, I'd be happy to take a few minutes and address some of that.
Yeah, well, why don't you do that? And if you would allow me, again, some minutes to show some things from our side as to why there's impatience and why we are where we are with respect to everyone else, that would be really nice.
Okay. Well, thank you for the opportunity to address some of these issues with Article 23. One thing that I'll say at the outset, we have to get to a point where we have a complete collective bargaining agreement, all 32 articles, the appendices that are ratified both by the bargaining unit and by the Board of Trustees. So even if we were to agree on Article 23 today, because there are other articles that have to be completed and we have to go through the process where the bargaining unit members vote to ratify or vote on ratification of the CBA, and then the Board of Trustees addresses it. We've got a few weeks ahead of us. There's no question about it. Even if we were to agree today, and we don't have all the articles that we are ready to agree on today. So even if we were to agree on 23, we wouldn't be done, and any one-time payments and any salary increases couldn't go into effect yet. Now, we understand how this works, and our history has been that if there's a delay in implementing the raises that we have, what has been our practice is to modify the one-time payment to recognize that. And certainly, you know, that's our intention to address that in subsequent meetings. So, you know, right now we're still hopeful we can get everything done next time and maybe have a shot to keep the dates that we had proposed. But chances are at some point, you know, those dates may have to slip. So this is why we want to get everything TA'd, everything agreed upon, everything ratified. It's only after that that we can implement these.
Yeah. So basically what I wanted to make it clear here is that basically what we're talking about, if there is a delay, then that will be added, the amount that they would have gotten had everything gone into effect on October 11 or whatever the date is, then we would do the calculation and that would be added to the one-time payment.
But yes, so
that's flat rate, not individually tailored.
Right, it's an average based on the bargaining unit.
Okay, and this,
we've already begun to talk about that on some of our local meetings. We're aware of it, but we want to keep moving forward.
So that's good. And since you still have the time to come back with Article 23, I just wanted to say a few things and also, you know, give you some handouts so that we have the context in which we're doing this bargaining. One of the things that I want to say up front is that, and I know, Chuck, that you agree and everyone in your team here agrees that we do this bargaining in good faith. We do not think of it as us and them, or you and us and so on. And we are all part of the same team in the sense that our interest is the same as your interest, which is that to help UCF get preeminent status, and that we do through sustained efforts in creating a nurturing environment, right, where everybody benefits. Students benefit, faculty benefit, staff benefit, administrators benefit. So basically what we try to do is whatever we do is in that good faith, that we are bargaining because we want to make this place better, right? I don't think there's any disagreement there. And so that's where we have gotten a little bit of a problem about, you know, the confusion that comes about because a number of people don't understand, because it's complex, how this bargaining works, and that whether, you know, this delaying what it does. So we really want to emphasize that part of what we've been doing for the past year or even longer, almost 3 years, is that we want a healthy relationship between you all and us, and that's behind everything that we are trying to do here. So I did want to impress on you a few points that have come about, because I'll give you some comparative numbers. And one is that, you know, we have to bear in mind that faculty at UCF are overburdened. And this is something that came up, you know, you probably, you may or may not know, but we also had a town hall on Monday. We also have had a questionnaire that went, and we got responses from a good number of people. So there's a lot of interest in people also giving us ideas about what we do or can do or cannot do. And so one thing, and I think I have also emphasized it anytime we talk about it, this faculty, student to faculty ratio, okay? And this is where I got some things here, which I'm sure you're aware of, but there is, you know, for example, there is an article from Palm Beach, you know, what is it called? The Palm Beach, I will get it all. It's essentially showing, you know, Florida colleges and Palm Beach Post. And this came out and it is talking about all the numbers. I think I'm not going to share screen because I'm going to give it to you and it will all be posted. But they talk about all colleges and universities in Florida. It goes from anywhere, Advent Health University, and St. Thomas University, and Rollins College. These are very small, 11 to 1. And then it talks about all the University of Miami and so forth. We know these numbers. So for Florida Atlantic, for example, it is still high, it's 21 to 1. But according to them, University of Central Florida is 30 to 1. Okay, it's the lowest. It's the lowest by far. And so you know, that is something to always bear in mind, that all of Florida universities are actually below the national average. And national average, I was looking up at this National Center for Education Statistics, and I'll send you the article that I got from them as well. And essentially, what you keep getting is that, you know, we are, their numbers, for example, they talk about 14 to 1 at public four-year universities. That's the average. And so we're talking about twice as many students as the average at public four-year institutions. So that is, you know, when we talk about appreciation of the hard work that, you know, average faculty member does there, that really is something that needs to be taken into account, that we are working basically at that level there. The other is that, you know, and this data that came out from this National Center, and let me see if I can get to that. And so what they do, and maybe in because of time, you know, we have many things to do, I will also not show you the thing there. But this is a National Center for Education Statistics. And again, these numbers would be out there, although this is so interesting that I do want to share my screen for just this one, because I think it's where did it go? Okay, Flora, just a second. Okay, where did it go? I think I have, all right, I have got too many things open here. And so there is a very nice exposition which talks about, just, is that it? No, that's not it. I think I got it. So this is something that I wanted to mention, and I don't know if you can see my screen.
Yes.
Okay, so you will have all these numbers. In fact, you'll have more than this. They have it's a very good analysis, but this was the one that I wanted to bring up. Because if you look over here, and this is all the way to 2022-23, not many changes, actually. and not always the slope going up, but this is basically talking about average salary of full-time instructional faculty on nine-month contracts at degree-granting post-secondary institutions. And they've done it by rank. And one of the things that I wanted to mention is that when we're talking about ranks here, so that's the full professors at 140 almost, and associate at 100, and 100,000, 140,000. But I think what I do want to emphasize, and I want to show you why this is important, is the instructors and lecturers, that the average salary is really more towards 65 to 68,000 per year. And that is something that has been there. It hasn't changed a whole lot, but that is something where we are again not doing as well. And that actually, and I will let you ask questions here, but that then goes on to what we have seen here now. And let me just open another one where it is quite interesting what we have. So do you have the problem when you have too many screens open, things just don't work out?
It happens a lot.
Well, I'll stop sharing there, but I did want to show you, and that's a good one that I found, and now let me make sure that I have it here. This came from FIU, which seems to be leading some of these discussions. So this, you know, they had their salaries. Let me just go, and I think I just had it. So essentially what they have done, there are two things that they have done that are important. One is that they have worked out a salary raise that is over 3 years. And that gives them a lot of leverage, because what they're talking about is 3 years, and instead of doing it, I got it. Now I can share it, and I think I would like to share it, because that is something I would like very much like you to take it to our administration and see if we can come up with something. And so yeah, this is what we're talking about. So this is FIU, and I think you can see my screen now. Can you see my screen?
Yes. Thank you, Tala.
Okay. So this is the one where what you see here is that they were able to secure an additional 10% compensation. And this is over the next 3 years. So they're talking about this thing, you know, this is their 2024-25, 3.5. And then a bonus. Then they're talking about 25, 26. That's a 2%, so 3.5 and then 2%. And then they're talking here about a split. So this year, coming year, it's a 3.5. And then 25, 26, it's 2% is the retention raise, then merit raise is that, and so forth. So you can see that over this period, they have worked out quite a bit. They already had a pretty significant increase last year. So basically, this is a university that just became preeminent status, right? And part of the reason is this healthy relationship that they continue to have with their administration, and the salary raises really reflect the appreciation that their administration is showing for their employees. I also think the minimum salaries that they talk about here, they have established a minimum salaries for faculty with PhDs or equivalent. And this is really something that we should be looking at, because I get emails from colleagues who are making less than 50,000. They have a PhD, they've been here 9 or 10 years, and they're having a hard time making ends meet because of the inflation that we've seen, the prices, the way they've gone up. And if you're renting apartments, it's just amazing, 25 to 30%. So, you know, I'll send you this entire package here. This talks about exactly what the raises have been with respect to the salaries of colleagues and over the years. And I think this is something, again, very detailed analysis. And we want to get to the point where we are also talking about salary raises over a number of years. And you know, we didn't get any last year. We have what is on the table is very little. And we have no discussion yet about what is going to happen next year. So this is where a lot of, you know, you can energize a lot of people if you come up with a package that, you know, slight, you know, you can't, even if you have don't have full resemblance, you can have some resemblance to what is going on in these other places. I'll stop sharing here. I will give you information on FSU. I have collected the numbers from them, and I'll send you that to post it also. So basically, and you don't have to go very far. You just go on Google and you ask for salary raises at FSU. And, you know, in fact, I might as well share it since I have it right here. I think that's the one. Let me see. Yeah. I think, again, I don't know if you can see my screen.
Yes.
Okay. So again, and this you will have, and you'll have an additional document that goes with it, because FSU does it in more interesting ways. They have this 4.2%. Then they have something what they call merit increase. Then they have a sustained performance increase and so on, and bonuses and so forth. And when what I want to show is that the numbers here, they're not doing it just 1 year at a time. This was for last year. This is for this year. For UF, last year it was 3.2. This year it is 3. So they're slightly less than FSU. However, they're way ahead of us. So I have given you that from UF last time. I am giving you I'll give you you know, these, and if you like, I can send you from other places. But I think I've made the point. You know, UNF has gone out of his way to increase salaries. They're talking about something like 17% and so on. UWF has done this. So all Florida institutions are, except for UCF, are recognizing that we have overburdened faculty, because the other universities, the major universities, still have something like 22 students per faculty, which is still a very large number. But we're talking about all of them trying to do something. And I don't know how we can keep telling, or the president can keep telling, how they appreciate all the work that our bargaining unit members do, but then it doesn't show up in the paycheck. It doesn't show up, you know, that appreciation somehow gets lost in the air. And I'm sorry, you know, words are good, but, you know, it's not enough. And when you have to pay your pocket bills, and when you have, you know, when you pay your bills out of your pocket, and when you have to have the inflation the way it is going on, it's a problem. So I think the main issue that, you know, point that I want to raise, get back to you, is that we are so far behind all our sister institutions. I'm not even comparing with anybody outside Florida. I'm only sticking with Florida. And if we just stay with Florida, we are way behind. And that has to somehow be reckoned with if we want to achieve this preeminent status, because you cannot achieve preeminent status when you have demoralized faculty. I just don't know of a place where that can happen. And this is a message that keeps coming back and forth. And when I have chairs of department, you know, and these are my colleagues, right? My friends, I've known them since when I was chair as well. When they come and say, well, can't you do something? You know, you are in a position to do something. You know, I can only convey the message. And I really think that if you want to keep UCF, you know, we have done wonders at this place. And if you want that to continue, and if you want us to keep attracting good faculty, I really think, I mean, I really, you need to go back to the provost, and maybe the provost should come and address us here and address why, you know, they think that we do just a fantastic job, but they don't have the money to pay us. We cannot buy that. We know that at least $35 million new dollars came. Where did they go? Every other place has used it for faculty. How can we not use it for that? You know, I mean, where did it go? Give us an explanation. You can't tell us that you just hired some advisors, you know, that, and we can't pit us against these advisors. How many advisors were hired? And what about the faculty? You know, without that, how are you going to be educating? You can give all the advice, but people need to know the content. So, you know, how do we go about it? I'm really at a loss as to how the president wants to achieve preeminent status and not reward the people on whose back he will attain that preeminent status. And you know, I don't want to go on any further. I've taken enough of the time. I'll send you that material. I'll send you some other material. But I really hope that this is taken seriously. I really hope that for all in unit, out of unit, a better raise is in the offing. And also the other thing is that why do we have to wait till now? And I know, Chuck, you want to do something about it, and that we really should address. We should not be talking about a raise for last year when classes have already begun. So we have to really get the schedule so that this is all done before we begin in the fall semester. So thanks for listening, Chuck, but I wanted to let you have some of the facts and figures that we have, you know, put together.
Well, Talat, thank you very much for sharing all that with us. I look forward to getting those tables that you showed us. I made a few notes, but there's no way I was able to capture all the figures.
I'll give it all. I think it's a lot of stuff, and I think you can look at it. It's actually rather good analysis that I found on the web.
You know, I'm going to take just a couple minutes more and address this, then I do want to get on to some things because I do want to make progress so that we can get to a completed CBA and get it ratified. You did come back and give us a new proposal last time when we met, and I thank you for that. And we've been looking at that proposal. I did some calculations on this, and the estimate for the additional recurring funds that would be associated with the proposal you gave us over the proposal that we made to you is about $14.5 million a year, as it turns out. And you know, I'm just not gonna lie to you. We're not gonna come anywhere close to that. that's just not gonna happen. I want to just briefly tell you how we got to the proposal that we got to. We told you in the spring when we were talking about 23-24, we didn't have anything that we could promise at that point. We asked to work through the summer, which you did, so we could get something out early in the fall, and we've made a proposal. I know that you would like it to be more. We would like it to be more. In fact, I was at a meeting last week when President Cartwright said that very thing. He says, we would like to do more. I also had a conversation with him at a reception last week. And you know, he expressed to me how important it is that we be fiscally responsible. And you know, I agree with him. He's absolutely right. We can't spend money that we don't have available to us. So we'd like to have more, we don't. I wanna briefly say, you know, how we got to what we proposed, because one of the things that we did is sort of change how the money would be distributed. We looked at fewer incentive awards as a possibility, and then having one-time payments for people that came through post-tenure review and so on. And What I can tell you is the money for the merit increase. We said in the spring we didn't have anything for a merit increase. The 3% is coming from the new funds that the university got, both for the in-unit employees and the non-unit employees. The one-time payment is something that we put on the table because there are non-recurring funds that are available at this time. We have heard you before and take it very seriously. We looked at these promotion raises and we proposed a 2% increase in the promotion raises for those going to associate professor and to professor. And the funds for those came from the recurring funds that we would trade for incentive awards. If we reduce the incentive awards by 60, which is what we had proposed, that frees up $300,000 of recurring funds, 60 times $5,000. It also frees up $300,000 in non-recurring funds, which is the payment that gets made at the end of the academic year associated with those incentive awards. So what we are attempting to do is to take the recurring funds that are freed up to fund the higher promotion raises, and then take the non-recurring funds to make the one-time payments for the folks that came through a post-tenure review. So the new money is the merit raise that we're talking about, and to a certain extent, the one-time payment. And then the rest of it is looking at priorities and trying to give some help to people who've achieved career goals or they've reached milestones in their careers, like getting promotion, either to associate professor with tenure or to professor. And then we also wanted to recognize the people who have come through post-tenure review and done very well. But we got the money for those raises, the promotion raises, and the payments for post-tenure review from the incentive award. I mean, that's how we make it possible. And I know you've proposed to us, maybe we can do some more with promotion raises. And I want to look at that. I can make no promises today about that. But truthfully, one possible source of funds is additional incentive awards. And we heard last week we don't like that so much. We'd like to keep those incentive awards. But that's how this is working. We have suggested to you some ways to sort of redistribute the money that had gone to awards, redistribute it as promotion raises or one-time payments for post-tenure review. But it's not new money, and we're not taking money away. We're just proposing that it be spent differently. But it's the same money that's involved. So I just wanted
Well, the
to make
incentive.
sure that was understood, that we're not taking something away, even if that's how it might appear. We're taking those funds and getting them into the hands of faculty, just with a different method of distributing those. That's
Well,
what our proposal is.
I mean, the
But
incentive awards are really popular, and that's really not something that, the bargaining unit members want to give up.
well, it's a lot since we're being frank with each other. We've heard in other bargaining sessions complaints about the incentive awards, that it's not right that people have to apply for a raise. We should do something else with those. So yes, I know there are people in the bargaining unit that truly value those incentive awards, and that's why we've kept them. But there also are other people that say, we don't think that's the best way to do this. So there's not unanimity. I don't know which group of people is larger. It sort of depends on what the proposal is we hear from the other side, with whatever's on the table. But if there was one size fits all, one size that everybody liked, I think that's probably what we do. But we're just trying to do the best we can. As you said, I do believe everybody that participates in these meetings, including the members of the bargaining unit that just listen in. It's because they all care about UCF and want UCF to be a great institution. One of the things in our strategic plan is we want UCF to be a great place for people to work and learn too. And that's, all of that is out there. We're trying to do the best we can. And you know, we'll come back next time on September 12th with something for Article 23. I don't want to set expectations too high and say, oh yeah, we're going to come back with $14.5 million more recurring funds. That's simply not going to be the case. So we'll come back with another proposal, and we'll see where we are at that point. But we hear you. We understand. I fully appreciate how money in somebody's pocket means more than a pat on the back. I get it. And I assure you the president and the provost to understand that as well. But I think you'd be outraged. We'd all be outraged if they spent money that we don't have. And, you know, that's not gonna happen. We're going to do the best we can with what we've got, and we'll come back and share something with you next time. Okay. Can we move on to some of these? You know what I feel like doing, Talat?
Yeah.
I'd like to get an article we can TA.
Okay.
So we can say we made some progress. Would it be okay if I put Article 5 up there?
That would be fine.
All right, thank you, Charlie. We've had a number of conversations over the last several months about Article 5. At one time, we'd even proposed status quo, and there were some suggestions that were offered to us on this article. We've gotten down to the point where there are a few words that we had proposed adding in Section 5.1. And when we talked about those last time, you said that those words aren't necessary, that everybody knows that the university has to abide by the laws, the regulations, and the rules. So we heard that, we went back and we talked about it with our team. You know, if we can agree those words are unnecessary, we'll strike them right now. We're at status quo, and we can TA Article 5.
I think we are ready for that. I mean, I don't even think we have to go forward to a caucus for that. So if you strike those out, I think we can TA Article 5.
All right. Fantastic. We are now up to 20 articles that we have.
Yeah, you saw all my color coding.
Yes. That was very helpful. So we have another green line on that.
I can, you know. That's how my mind works. Different colors. So
it was very helpful. Thank you. Okay, the next thing that I'd like to talk about, and I'm hoping we're on a roll, Talat, and
good.
We're going to keep going. I'd like to look at Article 16.
Okay.
And if I remember correctly,
sorry,
what you
which
said.
Which article did you say, 16?
16, please.
Okay.
What you sent us overnight said there was one sentence
yeah.
that we're still talking about, and that's in the middle of the article, and Charlie's going to get us there in a moment.
Where?
There you go. There we go. And this has to do with the notice period. And it had been 6 months. We said that that's too long. You had helped us with the wording of this, so that the way we're proposing it right now, this last sentence reads, cases in which the president or representative determines that an employee's actions do not adversely affect the functioning of the university or jeopardize the safety or welfare of the employees or employee colleagues or students, the employee shall be given notice of 60 days or until the end of the current semester, whichever is longer. Mm-hmm. If I remember, at one point it was suggested, and this was months ago, that, you know, maybe 2 months or something like that might work. What we're proposing here is if somebody's teaching, and this is somebody who's going to be terminated, but it's been determined they're not adversely affecting the function of the university, there's no safety issue with them, they could finish the current semester. And if we're very close to the end, they get 60 days. They get the longer of 60 days and the rest of the semester.
So this is, we're talking about termination of someone with just cause.
Correct. And, you know, I'll remind you and everyone else that typically when we get to a point like that, we've either got an egregious problem or there's been a progression of discipline. So this isn't a situation where out of the blue someone is issued a notice of termination. There's usually warning, sometimes quite a bit of warning about this. And even if that were to happen, even if we were to get to a point where there's an employee that the university felt needed to be terminated, as long as there's no issue with the functioning of the university or safety, the person would get 60 days or the end of the semester, whichever is longer.
So, you know, there are two ways to look at this. And, you know, part of it, so for example, if you had agreed to that the employee shall be given 6 months, I think we would be done with this article. Right now, the choice is, you know, we have to weigh which one is worse. So, for example, your first offer was that they may be given up to 6 months, and we said they should be given 6 months. So that is, we were actually, this difference was a word, not sentence, right? Because it was, we said, will be given 6 months, and you said up to 6 months. So up to 6 months bothered us because that meant that some people may be given nothing. And here what you're saying is that, well, they'll all have at least 60 days. And if it is in the beginning of the semester, then they will have until end of the semester. So I'm not sure if we are winning here. This is something I can take back and we can talk about it. Maybe that is the thing to do rather than caucusing about it. So maybe, but and also compare it with what is at other places so that there's some rationale to where we are, you know, why we are going with this. So yeah, I think we'll take it and talk it over.
Fortunately, these things don't come up very often.
Yeah,
to maybe three times a year, something like that.
I mean, they still come up, you think, three times a year?
I'm saying one to three. Yeah, I think that's possible. Yeah.
Wait, that a tenured appointment has to be.
It's not always tenured. But, you know, I think it could be one, two, maybe up to three in-unit employees.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see. That's much more, you know, I don't know. I have to get the numbers from other places. But when I was at Kansas State, that was very rare. But that was a different time, too. So I don't know. I don't know what it is. Yeah, it would be interesting to see what it is. Okay, let's we'll take it and we'll look at it.
All right. And I guess just the last thing I'll say about Article 16, the 6 months just doesn't fit with what we do as an institution. Tying this to a semester seems to make more sense. And looking out for the bargaining unit members who may be running into trouble very late in the semester, that doesn't give them much time, we say we'll give you 60 days. So, but 6 months doesn't mean a whole lot, because we do things in semesters more than we do in months. So, but thank you for listening to that. We'll look forward to hearing from you on that.
Okay.
Well, I want to take another chance. Can I show you Article 17?
Sure. And then I'm also hopeful that you may agree on 20. Although, yeah.
Well, last time we talked a little bit about Article 17. And I think there was some uncertainty about why we were changing leave to time off. And it turns out now when we go into workday and ask for a day off, sick leave, for example, for which everybody would be eligible for, it's actually called sick time off in workday. But in other documents that the university has, some of the documents that HR has, it's still called leave. So I think I've got every place in Article 17 where it is now leave slash time off. Mm-hmm. So there's, whether somebody's looking at an HR document that says leave, whether they're looking at workday and seeing time off, I think we got it covered if we use leave slash time off. And that's, there are many, many instances of that in the 18 pages of this particular article.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I don't think I made many changes here, except one that is, I'm sure would have been something we would have had some discussion about. We had proposed originally that for employees that were hired after the ratification date of this full book CBA, that there would be no sick leave payout after 10 years. Right now, employees who have 10 years of service, if they have unused sick leave, they get 25% of that to a maximum of 480 hours or 12 weeks. We've taken that out. We're sick leave payout stays as it is now. No change to the sick leave payout. So
we appreciate that.
Well, and that's an indication, I hope, that we're trying to get to some agreement.
Yeah, that's good.
Here. So
that.
Everything else in Article 17, I believe, was there before. One other thing that I wanted to point out, Charlie, can you advance to line 253? Thank you. Thought I'm just tempted to, you know, I know there are people that are disappointed in raises that they've gotten and so on. I'm not going to dispute any of the student to faculty ratios that you sent. We know that the people at UCF work hard. But what I want you to understand, you talked about the importance of bargaining in good faith. And I think both sides do that when we get together. And one thing that we noticed in Article 17 is that when someone becomes the guardian of a minor, a legal guardian of a minor, we thought that they should be eligible for modified instructional duties or paid parental leave. And we've added that. And I view that as the university saying our employees are important. We understand that sometimes they're going to have difficult personal situations that they're going to have to attend to. And this is one that we wanted to make sure was specifically called out in here. So there's about four or five places where the word guardianship has been added in Article 17. And it was our team that initiated those additions, and we're pleased about them. And I hope that your side will agree to those additions of guardianship. And I think the only other, there are two changes in the section on recovery leave, section 1710.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we've found is depending upon what circumstances an employee may be facing, sometimes they need a fitness for duty exam. Sometimes they really need an independent medical exam. They need to see a physician who can evaluate them to see whether they're able to perform the essential functions of their job. And we just wanted to make sure that that's clear. Sometimes it's a fitness for duty exam. Sometimes it's an independent medical exam. It's based on what is the apparent need of the employee. What kind of examination is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie, can you go to lines 546 and 547? This is the only other change that we made. We made it the last time we presented this article. It's not new. It's just I wanted to point it out because it is a change. We've had a situation recently where the fitness for duty examination was not conclusive. And what do you do in those cases? The ideal thing is if someone is examined, whether it's a fitness for duty exam or an independent medical exam, we would like the provider to come back and say, this person's ready to go, that it's okay for them to return to work. If that's not the case, if they're not able to return to work for whatever reason, we'd like to hear that. But we had a situation where they said, we don't know. And, you know, what do we do in those kinds of situations? So here in the lines 546 and 547, we're saying if the fitness for duty evaluation does not establish that the employee is able to perform the essential functions, the university shall place the employee on recovery leave. So we want to put somebody on recovery leave till we know that it's safe for them to return to work. We don't want to be in that situation. We don't know what to do. And we found ourselves in that one time. Other than that, Article 17 is what it was before. Those are the changes. So we know that you'd expressed to us last time, we weren't sure what the time off and the leave was. We tried to clarify that by using both terms, because either one can come up depending upon where somebody may be looking. And we've preserved the sick leave payout for employees. There's no sunset on that. And those couple changes that we pointed out, the guardianship and then a couple changes in the recovery leave section. Other than that, that article is really the same as it was before. So we're hoping that, you know, if you and your team examine that article, you'll be satisfied that that's okay. And can I do one more, 24? And then
yeah.
I'm going to turn it over to you because I want to hear about Article 20. And Todd, I'm sorry, I should have asked, do you have any questions about Article 17?
No, I think it's fine. I think you send that to us. We will go through it. I have a feeling that there's nothing, no disagreement there. We'll take a look at that, hopefully. And so just if we find everything to be okay, then I think I'll just, you know, accept the changes and then send you one that can be TA'd.
All right. Well, we look forward to You're hearing some good news on 17 as well.
That will
Article 24, we got some feedback.
The color will change for 17, hopefully.
Yes. Green's becoming my favorite color, Talon. I hope it is for you too. With Article 24, we got some feedback from your team last time. When we had proposed in Article 24, we intended to clean up Article 24. We thought we were cleaning up. Maybe we don't agree that it's a great way to clean it up. We've said, okay, there were some changes that looked like they were acceptable to both sides. There are other things that the UFF wanted us, sentences the UFS wanted us to retain. We've done that. A couple that we've indicated, you know, we're going to keep the language that the UFF recommended. Can you show slide 26, Charlie? One thing that actually your side pointed out to us, we don't have decals anymore. We want to have parking permits. Yes, so, you know, we want to do that. If we just start onto the next page, you know, we still have the university-sponsored email address. Retiree gets the university-sponsored email address on the ucf.edu domain upon request. That's how that works. There's some other things that we cleaned up a little bit. I think, Talat, your team was suggesting that we didn't need the word assignment when we talk about the professional development program. That's how we've been, how it's stated in Article 22. So I think it's consistent with Article 22 if we refer to those as PDP or professional development program assignments. So we've tried to keep that. The lines 56 through 58 are in addition. Since the last time you got a proposal from us, this is language that was in the MOU we had regarding the winter intercession and the Maymaster. The tuition waivers are not available for those two terms. They're available for the fall, the spring, and the summer. And is there anything else after that, Charlie? Oh, we just want to say that, yeah, the contingent waiver program has the same limitations as the employee tuition waiver program. That was stated before when we proposed Article 24. We've added a statement. This was there the last time, that people who are signed up for T2RP, if one of the years during T2RP would be a year that they would be going through post-tenure review, they don't have to do that. They don't have to go through post-tenure review. And I think the rest of these are all old. They were in there before. I think we're pretty close. So I want to thank you and your team for your input on 24. We've tried to scale back on the cleanup that we'd intended, and to utilize language that your side had suggested. So we're hoping that 24 is another one that we can come to agreement on. We're going to call it Green 24, okay?
Looks good to me. I think it will, yeah, hopefully it will turn green.
Okay, Talat, thank you. Those are the articles that we wanted to share with you today.
Let's see.
We know that you want to talk to us about Article
20. We want to talk to you about Article 20. And I think I'll share my screen. Okay, Article 20, share. Okay, and I'll make it a little bit bigger. So let's see if we can agree on this. So essentially, since we're on a roll, Charlie, let's see. I mean, Chuck and Charlie, this is so confusing. Okay, tongue twisters there, right? Chuck and Charlie. Okay, so this one, we basically, you know, Again, as we looked at it, so and we will talk about whether right. So this one here, no, that's okay. This is this you had put in. We won't go to that, but basically, the new element here is that, so if we go through it, so essentially this is just old stuff. We are defining everything, representation, grievance representatives, and so on, appearances. This is all that you gave us. So formal grievance procedure, we've got the filing. That's all the same, no changes there. Got time limit, that's fine. We've got postponement, which is also fine. Then we go to step one, and that again, I think it's no changes there. Step one is fine. And we go to step one, this is all fine. I think we can, if there's anything we missed, we can go over it. But the main, and now we come to step two. Okay. So in step two, this is where we've added a few things. So step two is where we talk about what step two right now is. And then we, and in step two, you've got decision. And then number four is what we have added. What it says here, we're putting in something new. It's called fact-finding document. In accordance with section 1000.741, Florida statutes, personnel action or decisions regarding faculty, including in the areas of evaluations, promotions, tenure, discipline, or termination, may not be appealed beyond the level of a university president or designee. In grievance cases prohibited by section 1001.741, Florida statutes, UFF, in consultation with the grievant, may elect that their fact-finding document be produced and submitted to the president or designee in advance of the step two meeting. The university will refer the grievance to a fact-finder or conduct an investigation, culminating in written non-binding findings of facts and a non-binding recommendation for the resolution of the grievance. The provost or designee shall make the referral to the fact finder, who will issue the non-binding findings and recommendations within 10 business days of their appointment. The fact finder will be a current faculty member in or out of the bargaining unit that is mutually agreed upon by the UFF and the university. Okay, so that's the thing. The selection of fact finder. For the first filing of a notice of intent to initiate fact finding during the term of this contract, representatives of the university and UFF shall meet within 15 days after receipt of a notice of intent to fact find, for the purpose of selecting a fact finder panel, which will be used for any further fact finding during the term of the contract. The parties will meet to select a fact finder from the fact finder panel consisting of no fewer than 6 members. Selection of an individual fact finder may be by mutual agreement or by alternately striking names from the fact finder panel until one name remains. The right of the first choice to strike from the list shall be determined by the flip of a coin. The parties may mutually select as the fact finder an individual who's not a member of the panel. And then number two, the fact finder shall not have a conflict of interest and not be from the same department or unit as the grievant. So basically, what we are saying, and we leave everything intact because this is only to address the cases in which arbitration is right now not allowed. So you remember we talked about having a panel, having 3 people in the panel, one from UFF, one from the university, and one neutral. And then there was a question of how will this neutral person be chosen? That is still a possibility. All we're saying is that there be a neutral fact finder who will be given all the information, and they will look at the information and come up with an understanding of and a non-binding recommendation. We fully realize that according to the Florida laws now, the last word goes with the to the president of the university. And basically, this is essentially going to be give it some due process, you know, some neutral. I think, you know, having something like that will be useful for both sides to take to have an outside party, not partial to what's going on, make a recommendation. So that is what is the main content. I believe the other one here we added, but I think this is what you have there already. This basically says to the extent this is again a Florida
statute. It's the same as the footnote, it looks like.
This is the same as the footnote. Yeah. And I think you had it there. It can be there or it need not be there. It is either in the footnote or there. So basically, I know you'll have to take a look at it. You'll have to take it to the lawyers and so on. But essentially, I think that's what we are recommending. If you think instead of a fact finder, you want a committee of three, that was the other thing that we had recommended in our original proposal. So this is our proposal number two. Proposal number one was that there be three people, one chose a committee of three, one chosen by UFF, one chosen by the university, and a neutral person. And there it would be three people looking at it. What we're saying now, if you don't want that, then we can just have a fact finder. And then, you know, we can always have a list of people. Then you decide from that who you want or you don't want. And also that list is going to be put together mutually. So it's not, you know, it's not just going to be from one side. So this is something that we will, send to you if you have any questions.
I have a question, actually.
Uh-huh.
So when we're talking about, I guess the thing is with Article 20, what we were trying to do was disrupt what we have as little as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense of how long it would be before the legislature changes its mind about arbitration for grievances at universities?
November would decide it out.
No, I really want to know. I'm not being tongue in cheek. I really
No. I agree. And I think, to not allow arbitration looks really, really pretty bad, you know? And so I think what we're doing here is basically we are actually leaving everything intact. That paragraph that on the other end is what you guys had put together as a footnote. It could remain as a footnote. It doesn't have to be there. This thing here basically brings in an element which gives us a little bit of relief. It is still not the same as having arbitration, but it is at least having another opinion. But no, Charlie, I have no idea.
Just being completely honest, I see this as an administrative headache to arrange, and I think it will delay your grievances exponentially. So just because we're trying to get to agreement as quickly as possible.
We put a 10-day limit.
That's even worse because I've got to find a bunch of people that are going to be able to serve within 10 days. And then what do we do when the university's closed for 10 days?
Well, so the other thing is that, you know, we don't do anything totally original. This is what we picked up from FSU.
Okay. So okay. Again, what I'm suggesting is in order to move as quickly as possible, that we could maybe put this in a document that we intend to reopen right away so that we can discuss how we could make this happen.
Right.
But we don't want to get in the way of progress. And okay. I have very strong feelings about the grievance article because I have to handle a lot. And I can tell you it's not easy just the way it is.
I agree.
So if you can really look at the language, our intent is only to say, hey, as soon as we can go right back to the table and put things back if that's how it, you know, because it may not be a perfect process and there isn't one, I can tell you, but our process it does work for us. So if you would at least consider R20 language just to get it signed and get going so we can get 23 signed so we can get your money to you. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah,
I don't mind at all opening this one right away. If you want to put articles 19 and 20 in Article 30 to open up right away, I'm all about it. We'll start talking about it right away. But just now, I feel like this is going to make things drag on because I would have to know every single bit of how it works and all of that. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I think, you know, why don't you guys take a look at that? We will also find out from others how they're working it and see if it can be done. This has been passed at other on other campuses. So there is some, you know, hopefully we don't have to use it very many times either.
We would use this a lot, I'll be honest, because if the dean signs something, it makes it a step two automatically. And so that means we would go right to this process. And it looks a little cumbersome. I'm not saying, I don't want to take away what the UFF has to offer. And I really am willing to consider that and maybe add my own thoughts or figure out who can serve on a panel all the time. Gosh, that'd be fun. But you see what I mean? Like, this is going to take UFF time as well. You're already volunteering and doing a lot of work. This is going to take a lot of UFF time as well. So that's my suggestion. Take it as you will. But I really want, if we had an idea that the legislature might change, then I wouldn't want to add this and then have to undo. We're trying to disturb this document as little as possible. We proved that with 17, taking out the sick leave things. We've done a lot of those things, trying to move forward as quickly as possible.
Talon, yeah. Can I ask a couple questions?
Yeah, sure.
I'm looking forward to reading through it, and I know you'll be sending that to us, and thank you for doing that. If I were to try to come up with just a short way to describe this, it looks to me like an optional step 1.5. Is that fair? We're going to step two. We may want to, it's the UFF may elect to do the fact finding. There may be cases where they say, we don't need to do that.
Yeah.
So it seems like it's sort of an optional step in the middle.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess I'm understanding it.
There's
also language right now in the CBA that a grievant can make additions to the grievance statement up until essentially the first grievance meeting starts. So with the step one grievance, we ask when we're at a meeting, you know, are there any other things that, you know, you want to tell us now that you want to add as potential violations of the CBA, because it's fixed at that point. So I'm one of the things that I'm going to wrestle with as I read through this is how do I reconcile that with now there's another document that gets added, because step two is really supposed to review the step one decision, whether it isn't a de novo review. It's really to look at the step one decision and review it. But if there's additional documentation, if there's additional information that's shared at that point, the step two reviewer is really not reviewing the step one decision, but now has a just an entirely different matter that they're having to look at. So I just need to read through this and reconcile it in my mind.
Would it make more sense to have it after step two?
No, then it comes after the president.
No, we have a step three, right?
No, arbitration was a step three.
Right. No, but the other option would be that this comes after step two, and then it is a recommendation to the president, and the president may take it or not take it. But what you're saying is that no, I think it should come before a step two. Yeah.
Well, let us look at it. You know, we appreciate the suggestion. We want to take a look at it. We promised you we'll read everything that you give us, and we will.
Yeah.
and we'll get back to you. This is different than what's been suggested before, so we need to take a good look at it and see what we think.
Yeah. Okay. I think that was the one. The other one was that okay. So the step so Article 9. It depends very much on that. In Article 9, we have the, it's called a mediator, and we would like to retain the mediator, and that, but we haven't, we didn't prepare it for today. We actually, that's essentially what we will do. That one is about cases where, I think the Florida laws don't apply there. So we would definitely like to keep the mediator there. So that was the one thing about Article 9. Article 10 is the one where we are dealing with PTR. Now with PTR, we have, this has now been dealt with at least two or three of our campuses. And so that is where I think, because you have already given us an Article 10.
Yes.
Right, and that Article 10 is the, so I think that's the one that would need a, well, if we have only that and Article 23 to deal with, then that is what we do next time. We didn't come prepared. We were really thinking about 23 today, so we didn't come fully prepared, but we have examples from a couple of other places. If you want, I can send those to you, but we will definitely come with our recommendations for Article 10.
Right, and Talat, I think Charlie contacted you maybe last week and made an offer that is still on the table as far as I'm concerned. What we had offered to do was to meet with you and maybe another person from the UFF and just not bargain, but just go through Article 10 that we proposed, because there are a lot of restructuring kinds of things that we did in Article 10, and just use that time, not as a time to bargain about that. We'd only do that in a bargaining session, but at least be able to explain the logic and so forth in the restructuring that was done in Article 10.
There's
so that,
of
that offer
is
still there.
Yeah, there's a lot of benign changes. It's just shifting, and I want to go through that slowly.
And I know. And I don't know how I missed that email, but then these 2 weeks have been pretty heavy.
We understand. That's why we're just going to mention it now.
Too many new students. Too many.
But Todd, we just thought that maybe
yeah.
You know, if we got together for an hour.
Okay.
We could save ourselves some time at a bargaining session.
Let me get back to you. If we did that, we would have to do that pretty soon. But maybe we can talk to you right after the session and see if we can come up with a time.
Okay.
And that way we'll yeah, okay. With you and Charlie, we could talk about that. Yeah. Yeah. Because it is pretty big on changes. And so,
yeah, it is. But as Charlie said, most of the changes are really benign. We think they're benign changes.
Right.
So it's a lot of restructuring and reordering.
Actually makes a lot of sense, because each time I started to look at it, I was... Right.
It's just as colorful as the list you sent us last night.
Yeah. Okay. So Charlie and Chuck, let's get back in touch. Do you, tomorrow, maybe we can talk at the football game. I know. Does everything close at 2 p.m. tomorrow? Or are you guys around after 2 p.m.? Is the university closed?
Yeah, at some point, I think it's dangerous to leave a car parked in the wrong spot.
Okay. Well, let me get back in touch with you right away and see if we can work out something.
Okay, thank you, Talat. And if you don't think that's helpful, okay, it's just we wanted to offer that.
Well, I have to say yes, because when I looked at it, it looked like there were things that were probably simple because they got cut and put in other places. And so yeah, let's take a look. We'll talk among ourselves too, and then see. But before we leave, and we have, still have a good number of people here, do we have, would people like to caucus for a few minutes and just take a short break, maybe 10 minutes or so?
Well, we could end the meeting and then you guys can stay. I'll just leave it open and I'll put you in, I'll open a break room so that you know that you're private. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, let me see if I understand. Do you want to just meet with your folks, the bargaining unit, and then end there? Or do you want to come back together with us and talk about what you talked about?
I think she's done with us, right, Talat?
I think so. What do you guys think, guys, bargaining team members? What do you think?
Yes to caucus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, but we main thing is, do we come back here? Do we need to come back? I guess we don't have anything to talk about. So you guys can probably go home now.
I don't think we need to come back.
All right, I'm going to pause the recording then.
All right, thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Have a great day.
I'm stopping the recording. We're pausing.
Please stop, Rupa.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay, talk to you soon.